Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Live on Aero. Presented by Ger Sweeney.
Are you fed up with me yet? I suppose I shouldn't ask the question if I don't know the answer, should I? Anyway, good evening and welcome. If you have just joined us, you missed two super hours. I was filling in for Dave on the program, so I hope that if you were listening for that 2 hours, that you'll stay through for the next hour, because it's the Irish program live on Aero, as it is every Monday at this particular time. Now, today I'm going to be joined by two great guests. June Burke grew up in West Clare. She's still living in West Clare. Her family are synonymous with the hotel industry in County Clare in Ireland. And June needed a little bit to pay attention to her mental health, let's put it that way, and she'll be telling us more about that later. And she discovered swimming, yeah, after being living by the sea. Literally, the Atlantic Ocean is outside her back window. And after living there for so long, she discovered the sea, and she has created a great movement where people go swimming on a daily basis, and it's proving to be really, really effective for them. So we'll find out a little bit about June's story. I will also be talking to Maurice Fitzpatrick. Maurice was the writer and producer of a fabulous documentary on particularly the amount of work that John Hume, the late John Hume, did in America to bring peace to the island of Ireland. And as you know, John Hume's death was announced a little earlier on today. He hadn't been well for many years, and we'll find out just how Maurice feels today on the day that is in it. All right, we'll have some news for you as well, if we can gather a little bits and pieces, some good Irish music. I'm hoping to play the number one song in Ireland on this very day, back in 1966. You're going to have a long wait now, I'm afraid, because I have to do the birthdays. Oh, the key. Yeah, down there. The front pocket. Wendy's here in the studio. Any notion at all on that mystery voice? No?
I think I do.
You think you do? All right, we'll see. Don't take the chocolate out of that sweet now, out of that pocket, because that's for you for tomorrow. Anyway, yes, we'll have some music in there. The number one song from 1996.
The door will be
open. Okay, and what do I do then? Okay, I think I'm going to have to do...
Huh?
Let me get a break. Oh, I see, I got you. Okay, thanks very much. Sorry about that. But it's an unusual scenario here. We're sharing a key today because Wendy forgot her key, so she's using mine. Anyway, right, let's get back to where we were. The number one song on this day back in 1966. Yes, that is it. Contact details, as always, if you want to get in contact with the programme, ger@tre.radio is the email address if you would like to get in contact with me. All right. Some days things just don't go well, do they? 6:05 exactly. Let's take a look at the famous Irish birthdays to start off, as we normally do. Shoot back, as we normally do. Terry Wogan, I mentioned this earlier. When I was talking to, to Wendy, on air, not just kind of at the side of the microphone, Terry Wogan would have been celebrating his birthday today. He was born in Limerick on this day back in 1938. Eamon Dunphy, former Irish international football player, now a journalist, pundit and contributor to, he's also a podcaster, contributes to many programmes as well. He was born on this day back in 1945. And Conor Pope, the journalist and activist, was born in Galway in 1968 on this day. Tomorrow, Tuesday, the 4th of August. It is hard to believe that we're into August, isn't it? Yeah, Moira Brennan, singer-songwriter, famous. She'd be a sister of Enya's, and she would also be part of the whole Clannad thing. She was born in Gweedore in 1952. Wednesday is the 5th of August. There's not a whole lot of birthdays this week, but anyway, Louis Walsh celebrates his birthday on Wednesday, talent manager from Kilchimaw in County Mayo. Born on that day in 1952. Billy Bingham, the former Northern Ireland football manager and player, born in Belfast on that day, 1931. A man whose name was guest for the Mystery Voice today, Gay Byrne, TV and radio presenter, unfortunately no longer with us. He passed away last November, born on this day, on the 5th of August back in 1934 in Dublin. And Paddy Glacken, musician from the Bothy Band, was born in Dublin on that day back in 1954. Thursday is the 6th of August, and Conor McPherson, the playwright, was born in Dublin on that day in 1971. Daniel O'Connell, campaigner, barrister, MP, born in Cahersaveen in County Kerry in 1775. And Richard Murphy, the poet, was born on the 6th of August in 1927. Friday is the 7th, and Eamon Darcy, the professional golfer born in Delgany in County Wicklow in 1952. Rosemary Smith, rally driver, still speeding around the place. She was born in Dublin in 1937. And Michael Smurfit, entrepreneur, was born in 1936. Actually, going back to Rosemary Smith, I heard a great interview with a very young, I think she was a hockey player, and she was supposed to go to the Olympics this year, but she's also into motorsport. And she was talking to the presenter of the program that I was listening to, and he asked her about her driving heroes, and she said Rosemary Smith would be one of those, obviously. And I'm sure Rosemary, who turns 83 today, would have been chuffed to hear that. And it's nice that such a young person would know of the skill and the talent of Rosemary Smith. Anyway, next Saturday into the weekend we go, the 8th of August. David Evans from The Edge, or sorry, from U2, also known as The Edge. He was born in Dublin in 1960. Well, he wasn't born in Dublin. He was born in the UK, as far as I know, back in 1961. Moya Dunphy, the producer, broadcaster and writer, was born in Dublin in 1976. She was very much involved, wasn't she, with the Riverdance programme show and all that, yeah. And finally, next Sunday is the 9th of August. Eileen Gray, architect and designer, born in Enniscorthy in County Wexford in 1878 on that day. Musical birthdays. One of the musicians that I mentioned there was a man by the name of Paddy Glacken, and he was involved with the Bothy Band. I had planned actually to take two tracks from the Bothy Band tonight, one after the other. I'm going to play the first one first, but it's only a short one. And the reason being that I might be able to play a second one is that my conversation with Maurice Fitzpatrick is lined up for 6:30, and I've other things to do around that. So let's take this track. I love it. I think it's absolutely brilliant, and I hope you like it too. It's from the Bothy Band. It's called Fionnuala.
Vein in fetter fulle man in vein in fetter fulle man in new and back on the mad vein in mit gresser and adding na marik net in uns hier in a born and born and a born and born and a born and born born of a fulle and a born and born and a born and born and a born and born born of a fulle I do shit at in the shop I do shit at in the shop I do shit at in the shop vein mit gresser and adding na marik net in uns hier in a born and born and a born and born and a born and born born of a fulle and a born and born and a born and born and a born and born born of a fulle vein in fetter fulle man in vain in fetter fall man in ulan back on the mad vein in gresser and adding na madik net in uns hier in a born and born and a born and born and a born and born born of a fulle and a born and born and a born and born and a born and born born of a fulle I do shit at in the shop I do shit at in the shop I do shit at in the shop vein in gresser and adding na madik net in uns hier in a born and born and a born and born and a born and born born of a fulle and a born and born and a born and born and a born and born born of a fulle Ursting off, we need me ursting off, follow me ursting all, it's an all. I've had an all, it's an all, got a head, do you see?
And in a born and born, and in a born and born, and in a born and born, born of a fanola, and in a born and born, and in a born and born, and in a born and born, born of a fanola.
Beautiful, isn't it? That's from the Bothy Band from back in the 1970s, a song that's called Fionnuala, and I will try and take another track from the Bothy Band before we finish things up at 7 o'clock this evening. Right, I'm going to take a quick break. Come back to me just after that, please, if you would. I will be talking to June Burke in West Clare.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Now, I'm delighted to be able to bring this piece to you, because last week I mentioned that I was going to be talking to somebody who is a great proponent and a great supporter of the idea that swimming is very good for your mental health. I know it's good for your health, but the mental health I wasn't too sure, although exercise is probably linked in with that. Now, June Burke joins me via Zoom this evening. June, good to talk to you. How are you?
I'm great, thank you.
Good. I wanted to talk to you about, I don't suppose you could call it anything other than a movement that you are responsible for starting. Am I correct in saying, and before that I should introduce you as saying that you're one of the Burke family that owns and runs a very well-known hotel called the Armada Hotel back in Spanish Point in West Clare. And you grew up there, didn't you, June?
I did indeed, yeah, right on the beach almost.
Yeah.
It was at my back door.
Right. And you were never a lover of the going into the water, am I correct?
Well, it wasn't really that, I suppose, that I wasn't a lover. In the summertime, I didn't probably get the opportunity to do it because my siblings and I were brought up in a family business, and the summertime, that was our busiest time. So we were working. We were always working from a very young age.
Right.
So we didn't get to the beach that often, to be fair. We probably didn't appreciate it as much either back then, you know. Mm. It was on our doorstep and we almost took it for granted.
I was back there with you at the hotel a couple of weeks ago and we were sitting, yes, having a cup of coffee and the Atlantic was lashing in at that stage because it was a particularly bad day. But it's such scenic and such a magnificent spot, isn't it, to be in?
Oh, it's beautiful.
Mm.
It is.
Now, this movement that I spoke about, it's called Snorvi Sosta, and to go to be,
right,
to be a Snov is to be swimming. That's the Irish word for it. Sosta is happiness, am I right?
Yes.
So
happy swimming.
Happy swimming. Rivers. All right. Tell me how it came about, please.
Absolutely. On the 12th of August 2012, I lost my husband to suicide.
Okay.
Yeah. And the years that followed, I suppose I was so tied up with, my children were 5 and 9 at the time.
Okay.
And I was so busy looking after my children. I was of the assumption that if my children were okay, I would be okay. But while I put all my time and energy into my children, I neglected myself.
Okay.
And my sister-in-law used to say to me, you know, you can't serve from an empty vessel. So I had tried lots of, I was suffering very badly from stress and anxiety at this stage. And I had tried lots of different things. I had done the gym. I had done yoga, Pilates, all those kinds of things, mindfulness, but nothing seemed to be working.
Okay.
And one day I was sitting in the Armada having a cup of coffee, looking out at the sea, the mm-hmm. same ocean I had looked out at all my life, really. Yeah. And I said, maybe I'll go for a swim in the morning. Now, I suppose the only thing, the obstacle was that I can't swim. So, but at this stage, I was in such a bad place. It was sink or swim, and I was determined to swim. I wasn't giving up. So I went down for a swim the following morning at 9 o'clock, and it's hard to describe it. You need to experience it, I think, to understand. But it's almost like you leave your troubles on the shoreline.
Right.
I felt so good. I felt like I could take on anything that came at me that day. And there and then I decided that I was going to make this a daily habit, that I was going to do it every day. And that if I could feel this good, I wanted other people to feel what I felt, okay, you know. And I knew that if I didn't, I suppose, put it out there, that I probably wouldn't commit to going every day on my own. So that evening, going to bed, I put a post on Facebook saying that I was going for a swim the next morning if anybody would like to join me. And there was a local woman in Spanish Point, Mary, and her husband saw my post on Facebook. And right, he said, Jesus, Mary, June Burke is going for a swim in the morning. Why don't you go down and join her? So she did.
Right.
And the second day, there was 4 of us. And then it grew from that. I set up an Instagram page called @SnovisOsta. And it was all about promoting positive mental health and well-being and, you know, lifting people up and encouraging them to get out there into the fresh air, to get into the sea and to give it a go. And it kind of grew from there, Ger.
You said to me before we came on air that you were swimming this morning. How many people were swimming in the Atlantic Ocean?
We had in excess of 100 people this morning.
Wow.
And they had come from all kinds of places, like people from Tipperary that had done a round trip to do the swim. Yeah. People coming, they come from all over Ireland now to swim.
The day I sat with you in the Armada, you had been in the water earlier in the day and you said that a family had come from Donegal the previous day. Donegal.
That's right. Yeah, they had driven all the way from Donegal. They did the swim. It was a Sunday morning. They did the swim and they joined in. We have a country music disco on a Sunday. We do a hoolie on the beach.
Yeah.
With Ollie Malooly, and we do our country music. We have breakfast on the beach. We have a few songs, a bit of traditional music, and they joined in and they got back into their car and drove back to Donegal, and they said they felt amazing.
On the second morning that your neighbour Mary went with you,
yes,
did you discuss where you were at in your particular head at the time and why you had decided you wanted to go for a swim on a daily basis?
We did. I just said that I was in a bad place and that I needed something for me, something for my head. And I found the sea, I suppose, and I've never looked back, really.
There was a period of a couple of months where we were locked down, but a lot of people who would be living in areas like you are living back in West Clare were able to go for a walk on the beach or were able to have a dip in the ocean. Did you continue with the swim at that stage?
I didn't. I suppose I keep saying I pressed the pause button for a little while because I didn't want to be seen to be organising any gatherings.
Okay.
So I decided to pull back from the swim. And for me, that was very hard.
Yeah.
Because it was something I was doing every day. And I really did. I found that hard for the first couple of weeks. But I just felt I couldn't be seen to be bringing people to the beach, bringing groups of people, because on any given day, I never know how many people will turn up.
Of course.
Just don't know.
Yeah.
Now, I know the swim continued without me. Some people went to Spanish Point Beach. Some people went to the White Strand Beach. But as I say, I ceased it until the restrictions were lifted.
How difficult was that for you, June, when you were without something that was helping to keep you on even keel, maybe, if I can use that word, mentally?
Yes. For the first couple of weeks, I found it very hard. I'd be getting up in the morning and looking out at the sea and really wanting to be there. But I just knew it was the right thing to do. I couldn't share.
Right. Was there a difference in your mood? Was there a difference in your thought process during that time? Or were you aware enough to know that, look, this too shall pass and I'll be back in the water soon?
No. I was aware of that, actually. And yeah. I was. I knew that we would be back and it wouldn't be too long, you know.
Yeah.
And I had to keep reminding myself of that, you know.
Yeah.
I'm a great woman in believing in gratitude. I practice gratitude all the time. And I have a diary that I have at my bedside table. And every night I write down three things I'm grateful for.
Okay.
So it sets me up for the next morning because I wake up almost feeling brighter.
That's an incredible exercise to do. Tell me about your children. Did they and do they swim with you?
My daughter, who's 12, is a fair weather swimmer.
Is she?
To say. She's a real skinny little thing. There's no meat on her, so she finds the water very cold. But she does get in, to be fair.
Good.
My son is a surfer.
All right. And of course, there's lots of surfing back there.
Yeah, he's a fantastic surfer.
Great.
So he, not so much the swimming, he prefers to do the surfing.
Fantastic. Tell me about the people, without identifying them, who swim with you. Do they come now to be part of the movement? Or are there people there that are looking for something to help them with their own mental health and with getting through a day or a week?
Probably both, Ger. I had a lovely couple on the beach the other morning that had come from Tipperary. They had lost their son to suicide, a 20-year-old boy, a year ago this coming Sunday.
Wow.
And they saw an article in the Sunday Independent in the Life magazine that I had just done this Sunday gone by and decided that they would make the journey from Tipperary to meet me and to do a swim. And the pain that couple were in, it was unbearable even looking at them.
Yeah.
And they got into the sea and I had a message and I was so sorry because I had spoken to them for a long time, but I hadn't asked them their names. And I was saying, God, I wonder, will I ever hear from them again? Because they left and they said, God, this is amazing.
Right.
Well, sure enough, I was thinking about them all day and I got into bed on, I think it was Monday. I got into bed Monday night and my phone beeped and I had a message from the lovely woman saying how she felt so good after the swim.
That's great.
Her first time in 12 months that she was smiling.
Right.
And her plan is to come back with her children. She has three other children and they're going to come back with their children in the next couple of weeks.
Fantastic.
And because they want their children to experience it. They said that they spent all day talking about it and now the kids want to come and try it.
Yeah. You said when you started this that you couldn't swim. Can you still not swim?
I'm not a good swimmer, to be honest. I couldn't swim at all in the beginning, but I have taken some lessons. So I'm improving.
Good. And enjoying it.
I can hold myself up and I'm enjoying it. I have to say I love it. I think whatever sort of a mood you're in, the sea can lift it. If you're feeling low, you'll certainly feel a little bit better. And if you're feeling great, you're going to come out feeling even better again, you know.
I spoke to a man some time ago, a friend of mine, who was actually based back in West Clare as well, not too far from where you are. And he told me that going through a particularly difficult time in his life, that he found the sea was a great therapy. He didn't go into the sea, but he used to stand next to it. And he said that
the
noise of the crashing waves during the wintertime particularly was so loud that he couldn't hear his thoughts. And that was the only respite he had.
Yes. Yeah. It's kind of hard to describe it, Ger, but there's great healing in the sea. And it's something that you can do. It doesn't cost any money.
Yeah, that's it.
Get into your togs, go in for a dip. Nobody looks at anybody. And I think in our swim group, you know, sometimes people are conscious maybe of body image.
Yes.
I'm a size 16 or I'm a size 14 and I can't get into a swimsuit. I know my own mom, it took her 30 years to get back into the sea. And she was saying to me last year when I started Snobby Sauster, she said, I can't get in. They'll all be looking at me. Look at the size of me. And I said, Mom, it's the funniest thing ever. I said, but nobody looks at anybody. Nobody cares. Once you're okay, that's all that matters. It's not about how you look.
Mm. Is this a kind of a support group?
It is, in a way, yeah. People share their stories.
Do they?
They do, absolutely. People share their stories with me every day. Every day somebody comes up to me and tells me why they're there. We follow you on Instagram. We love your Instagram page. And they will share their story with me.
That's incredible. And all of this really is by word of mouth and by
absolutely.
Instagram.
Yes.
Instagram as well, which is fascinating.
Instagram is the big one, yeah.
What's going to happen with it? Is it just going to roll on like the waves?
It's going to roll on like the waves. I suppose it's a daily swim, 365 days a year. Last Sunday morning, I had a message from somebody that was coming to the swim and it was her first time. She was staying in Lange.
Right.
And about 8 o'clock, I got a message from her and she said, hi, I'm just wondering if the swim is going ahead today because it's a little bit wet. And I said, absolutely. I said, wet is wet. You're going to get wet anyway. The swim is going ahead. And she came to the swim and she introduced herself to me afterwards. And she said, I feel like such an Egypt now. She said, this was fabulous.
Is there a particular time of the day when this happens?
9 o'clock every morning.
So when I come back from Spain and if I have to do quarantine, I'll do it. But I'll have to join you, I guess, at some point when I come back.
Absolutely, Jerry. Yeah, we look forward to that.
Somebody told me you're writing a book about this.
I'm thinking about writing a book. I am. I took inspiration from you, Jerry.
I don't know about inspiration, but you announced last week that you were going to write it. And
I did. I think it's a collection of shared stories more than a book about me. I know I will tell my story in part of it, but I'm going to interview lots of different people that have joined the swim.
Great.
Down through the last 12 months and maybe get them to share their story about why they joined, what it means to them, how they have benefited from the swim, and lots of lovely, colourful pictures and images as well.
Okay.
Of different people.
I would imagine that there will be a lot of people listening that will be interested in looking at your Instagram page to find out a little bit more about it. So Snavi Sauster. Yes. So it's S-N-A-M-H-A-I, S for sugar, A-S-T-A. That's it. I'll give that again before the end of the programme. And all of your activities are up there and there's people waving and dipping in and out of the sea and all sorts of fun like that.
Yeah.
June Burke from West Clare. Before I leave you go, I know you're still very much involved with the running of the hotel there. Are you busy?
We are very busy.
Good.
It's fantastic. Great season with the Irish all staycationing, which is wonderful.
Fantastic. All right. Well, listen, I wish you well with the hotel business and I wish you well continued success with Snavi Sauster. And think of us in the morning at 9 o'clock when you're heading into the water, won't you, when it's cold?
Ger, thank you so much.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Now, welcome back to the programme. I am at the moment trying to make contact with the man that we're going to talk to next, who is Maurice Fitzpatrick. And the death was announced today, if you are into Irish politics, or indeed world politics, I suppose you could say. The death was announced of John Hume, the former leader of the SDLP in Northern Ireland, and also the recipient of, joint recipient of a Nobel Peace Prize. Maurice Fitzpatrick is on the line this evening. Maurice, good evening. How are you? I'm sorry to come to you immediately live, Maurice, and not get a chance to say hello before we spoke. But technical issues at this side again and again and again. But there you go. Anyway, Maurice, you wrote and produced a wonderful documentary on John Hume called In the Name of Peace. John Hume in America, and it was on the 30th of July back in 2018 that you and I spoke on this program about John Hume and about that documentary. Can I ask you firstly about your feelings today, what you felt when you heard of the death of John Hume?
It was very difficult to absorb. It still is in many ways, the passing of an 83-year-old man who has been plagued with health issues isn't a huge surprise to anyone, but yeah. At the same time, he's a huge public figure, and it reminds me of a phrase of the poet W.H. Auden, the body of opinion. There's a body of opinion and a body of work associated with John Hume that suddenly we have to assess and reflect on when he passes. So it's been difficult to absorb, and I think it's a huge moment in Irish history.
Now, you spent a lot of time with the family and his wife, Pat, particularly. By the time you were making the documentary and writing the book, John himself was unwell at that stage. And I think I recall during the interview, you remarking to me that John Hume doesn't know who John Hume is and has no concept of the value that he has been to the island of Ireland and indeed peace on the island as well. Did you get to meet John? I can't recall.
Oh yeah, I did meet John quite a few times. Yeah. I mean, initially it was to film a previous film of 10 years ago called "The Boys of St. Columb's."
Oh,
St.
Yes.
Columb's was the secondary school Hume attended in the 1950s. So at that stage, while his health was in decline, he was still capable of being a camera view.
Yeah,
and I met him then, but then. As time went on, I was making a film about his political life and particularly his engagement with senior U.S. figures for peace in Northern Ireland. I was, to an extent, working with John, but it was very often, more often with his wife, Pat, who extremely able and knowledgeable person about Hume's political life, and she helped me and the family, the children helped me a great deal as well. Hume at that point was, retrenched. He was not giving interviews, and I fully accepted that. And
right.
While he's in the film, he doesn't have a speaking role in
yes.
the film.
Yes, yes, yes. There's been a lot today. The television here in the studio and going through the different news channels, everywhere you turn, John Hume's face is there, or there's somebody talking about John Hume. What was it that attracted people to him? Because I know in the documentary that there was a great move towards him from America, the likes of Ted Kennedy and Tip O'Neill, they kind of moved towards him and invited him to come to them and get them involved in the whole thing. What was it about his character?
Well, there was something indeed about his character, his absolute integrity and clarity when it came to methods of resolving political issues. He felt that there was no room for violence. He repeatedly stated that, Jer.
Mm.
So, the view of a senior U.S. senator, like you mentioned, Ted Kennedy, that was absolutely critical. And any real figure on the island of Ireland who had a different view, who really didn't get Ted Kennedy's door, was far too controversial for a senior U.S. figure with a lot to lose, but like that, to countenance having any kind of involvement with a politician who was in the least bit ambiguous on the use of violence. Hume had that much. He also had it planned out in his mind exactly what was required from the Irish government's point of view, the UK government's point of view, all various stakeholders in this very strange scenario of this conflict in Ireland. He had clear vision of what was required, and he was apt to, you know, the teacher in him in this first iteration, he was a teacher. He was apt to explain this again, you know, what was required and how people could help people in Europe, you know, this burgeoning community of nations in Europe and indeed the United States could play an assisting role in political reform and peace in Ireland.
His legacy, what do you think, like everybody is talking about the Good Friday Agreement today, people are talking about, you know, the work he did as leader of the SDLP, the civil rights movement, I suppose, where it all started for him. What will his legacy be, do you think?
Well, the fact that we do have a functioning assembly now, we've been through one of the biggest ruptures in the last 3 years, the suspension of this assembly. The fact that it is running again, one can be very cynical about the reasons for it, but the fact remains it is up and running.
Yeah.
And that shows people of whatever persuasion they are that the need for political action in contradistinction to violence. That's one key legacy, Chair. Another, I mean, it just occurred to me recently, we can never forget where Hume came from in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s in Derry, a place of huge disadvantage for the Catholic minority, a place of huge bitterness about the way in which politics was administered. And Hume came from that place, and he made it a better place. So this, put it as simple as that, he was a lot of the progress that's happened in the island of Ireland is attributed to Hume. He also, let's remember, created a role for the Irish government that the government had very much abdicated from, and that, namely, a continuous focus on the North. Today, the Department of the Taoiseach, Department of Foreign Affairs, it's taken as read that they will have an ongoing engagement with the North. That was not so during John Hume's youth, and right up until, coincidentally, the year in which he became elected and in February 1969. And when he had this position as first as MP for Northern Ireland and later MP, you know, Westminster and European MEP, when he had this position, he made it very clear to the Irish government and later also the UK government that it really did need to do something about the North, that there was something structurally defective about the Northern Irish state, that they had to restructure, sit around a table and bring the hardliners in and imbue them with a sense that the only political way forward was through constitutional politics.
I won't delay you much longer. I know the line is bad, and I apologise to listeners for that, but what you I know it's not going to get any better, so there's no point in trying to recall you. But I don't want to delay you too long either, Maurice, but can I ask you about the bravery of the man? Because a lot of people have paid tribute to him today, and a number of people have talked about the courage. And no matter what he did, and no matter how people viewed it, if it was, in his mind, the right thing to do, he did it. And I suppose the biggest example of that would be when he started talking to Gerry Adams, who was president of Sinn Féin at the time. The Irish government couldn't be seen to talk to him. The British government couldn't be seen to talk to him, even though there were back channels going on all the time. But Hume came out and said, this is the right thing to do. And if I don't do this, we're not going to move past. We need to talk. And that sums him up, really, doesn't it?
That's right. I mean, you used the word credibility, and he did have a huge amount of credibility at the time when he opened dialogue with Gerry Adams. And it was a tremendous risk for him to take, because there were voices, and I mean many voices, in high levels, who basically saw him as one step away from being an agent of a paramilitary organization by seeming to lend this credibility to the leader Sinn Féin. And Hume, as you rightly said, he had a completely different analysis. He didn't waver from where he stood from how he saw things, but he did feel an obligation to bring in the Republican dimension of Northern Ireland into the political process. And, you know, he took a lot of criticism for that, including from members of his own party, who would not have seen that as a correct step, or that, you know, they would have criticised that he hadn't exacted the right concession or sufficient concession from Sinn Féin before opening that dialogue. Right. But for Hume, I mean, to paraphrase what Hume said at the time, if it saves one life, I will do it. And that's it. There's a tremendous logic to that.
Mm. Last year, we lost Seamus Mallon. This year, we've lost the wonderful John Hume. Are they making politicians like they used to anymore?
A slight correction, actually. It was just the beginning of this year we lost Seamus Mallon.
Oh, was it? Oh, it was. It was January. Yeah. That's right. Sorry, yes.
It was January, yeah.
Yes.
There are some wonderful political representatives around. I mean, there are many of the other varieties as well, but there are really strong voices, including in Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
But that, it's true. It was a sort of a nature that both Seamus Mallon and John Hume came along at the same time, and others. It was a very strong team of civil rights defenders and some of the founding members of the SDLP do go down in history as among the most fervid upholders of democracy at a time when there was scant little democracy in the West, but they held the line, as Bill Clinton said in the John Hume in America. John just held the line.
All right. Well, listen, Maurice, it's been lovely talking to you. I really do appreciate. I know that you and I have had 3 or 4 conversations throughout the day trying to organise this and the wonders of technology. Yes. And I do appreciate the time. I did a little blog earlier on, and I reposted the interview that you and I did on the Emerald Connection. And just as a reminder, and I mentioned as well, I said, look, when you listen to this, please then go and watch the movie, the documentary In the Name of Peace, John Hume in America, it's called. It's fascinating, it's brilliant, and I really do appreciate you taking the time out to talk to us today, Maurice Fitzpatrick.
It's been my pleasure, Jerry.
Oh, great.
Thank you so much.
Okay, and apologies again about the lack of introduction on the start of it. Thanks, Maurice.
No.
See you. Bye-bye.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
No, I wanted to play a piece of music, but I just didn't get a chance to do that after, because I wanted to get that commercial break done and dusted after we spoke to Maurice. But I thought we should play something that would in some way just pay tribute to John Hume. And I thought, how better to do so than to play a song that was written about the town that he comes from, or the city that he comes from, that being Derry. And the song that was written by Phil Coulter, a number of years ago, about his own experience of growing up in Derry. And the first 4 verses, I think, are about that. And then the second, the next 2 verses are about the troubles that hit that beautiful city a number of years ago. And here is the Dubliners to sing that song.
Shirt factory horn called with dog, while the man on the dole played a mother's role, feathered the children, and then trained the dog. And when times got tough, there was just about enough, but they saw inside was a burning pride in the town I loved so well. There was music there in the dairy air, like a language that we all could understand.
town I love so well. and their version of Phil Coulter's The Town I Love So Well, all about Derry, the hometown of the late John Hume, and we play that in tribute to him this evening. And again, thank you to Maurice for joining us to talk to us about John Hume. Now, it's almost 8 minutes before the hour of 7 o'clock, which means I've got 8 minutes left. I did promise that I would play the number one song in Ireland on this very day back in 1966, the year before I was born. And one of the first female show band stars was a lady by the name of Eileen Reid. And she headed a band called The Cadets. So it was Eileen Reid and The Cadets. But she left the band in the early 1960s or mid-1960s. And somewhere along the line, there was changing and chopping and all that kind of thing that goes along with it. But a fella called Gregory Donaghy joined the band, joined The Cadets for a little while. And while he was there, they had a hit on this very day with this very song. Day back in 1966. That is my lot for today. I hope that you enjoyed the program as much as I enjoy it, putting it together. Now, in fairness, there was about four different programs organized for today at four different times. And when I woke up this morning and realized that poor old John Hume had passed away, I knew that that was it. Out the window with the schedule for today's program. But anyway, that's the least of anybody's worry, isn't it? Thank you so much to my guests today. June Burke from West Clare talking about Snow V Sawston. If you want to check out her Instagram page, it's S. There's no F as in Freddie in this now, right? So it's all S's that you'll hear. So it's Snow V Sawston. S-N-A-M-H-A-I. S-A-S-T-A. Snow V Sawston, which means happy swimming. And I wish June and her friends ever a lot of happy swimming in the months and years to come. Thank you also to Maurice Fitzpatrick for talking to us about John Hume and the great work that he did down through the years as well. Thank you as always to our Spanish-Irish Cultural Associator, I suppose our cultural advisor, that's Jose Antonio Sierra. But most of all, thank you for listening, and I hope that you've enjoyed the programme. As I said, back tomorrow for Dave between 4 and 6. I mean, every day, Monday to Thursday, for the next 3 weeks for that particular programme. The Irish programme, back with you again next Monday between 6 and 7, hopefully. Look after yourselves in the meantime. I would love, I hope PJ Curtis, my old pal, is listening back in County Clare, because PJ did a lot of work with the Bothy Band, and I was only thinking today that he was probably in studio when the album Out of the Wind Into the Sun was produced back in 1977 from the Bothy Band, and I'm taking a track from that to say goodbye to you this evening on the programme. Where is it? Here it is here. So we're going to start with that one, aren't we? Yeah. This is called The Strayaway Child. I won't get it all in before seven, but as much as I can, enjoy it. From me, Ger Sweeney, bye-bye and look after yourselves.
Listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalog of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.